T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
By the way, Yankee fans, you need some good news. Can I give you some good news if you're a New York Yankee fan?
Let's go.
Carlos Rodon today into the sixth inning with a no-hitter before the Yankees decided, hey, you've done enough today.
That's a real game right there.
What, you wanted to keep him in to get a spring training no-hitter?
No, I'm just saying, you if he does that regularly,
yeah,
no hits for six innings, talking Cy Young over here.
Well, listen, if he gets pulled with five and two-thirds innings.
That Sevy future bet. How about Rodon?
Right, that's the better bet, Rodon's side.
Right, he's so, the ace.
So guys, just show me, you guys should make that bet right now. Tell me what the odds are. I'll consider it.
I forgot to make the Sevy one. Damn it, I forgot.
You haven't done it yet?
I forgot.
Now you can only
I just reminded myself.
You can only make those bets in the state of New Jersey, but you can make it. So Carlos Rodon, 5 2/3 innings, no hits, no runs, 5 Ks a walk, lowers his spring ERA to 2.93. How about that?
We're back.
We're back. Now, I don't want to be a bad guy. I just have to be an honest guy. Because I'm not a bad guy. I'm just an honest guy. So yesterday, I have this tradition in the Roberts household.
Mm-hmm.
On Selection Sunday, I sit down, sometimes on DVR, like last night, I think it was about an hour in, so it was like 7 o'clock at night. No idea what the results are, who's going to be in the tournament. I sit down, and I watch. And I watch every second of it, and I even write down who made the field of 68.
I'm a loser.
Mm. Now, I admit, I want full transparency here. How many college basketball games did I watch this season? I'd say a grand total of 5 or 6. And all of them were either St. John's games or Seton Hall games,
mm-hmm.
and even a few in which they played each other. So I have been exclusively watching the Big East. My interest in the national basketball scene in college hoops is usually less intrigued when the Knicks and the Nets don't have lottery picks. The Knicks are too good. The Nets are incompetent. So it's really strictly been Big East watching. So I admit what my knowledge of watching is. But as I'm watching the bracket revealed, I did my own research.
Okay.
I went online. I went to real-time RPI. Now, I know they don't use RPI anymore. Now they use this thing called NET. And I studied NET. And I studied RPI. And I studied the schedules. And here's what I came up with. I have no earthly idea why the Johnny fans are being babies. You guys didn't deserve to be in the NCAA tournament. Like, what are we talking about? Seton Hall? Yes. Seton Hall beat the number one team in the country, UConn. Seton Hall has multiple quality wins. St. John's beat nobody. You didn't beat anybody. So I get it. Oh, Rick Pitino's here. I'm excited. We got hot at the end of the season. Great. You finished the season strong by beating Georgetown, who was 2-19 in the conference. Let's have a party. You beat DePaul, who, you know, was 0-21 or whatever they are. Have a party. Like, I'm just an innocent man looking at your schedule. And I'm seeing, all right, who'd you beat? You beat Creighton once. That's it. You didn't beat anybody else. You even lost to Michigan, which probably should disqualify you.
Right. Fired to Juwan Howard. 8 wins on the season.
So I got to tell you, I'm racking my brain, and I'm not anti-St. John's. I'm not at all.
Just trying to keep it real?
I'm just keeping it real. Like, they sucked in the middle of the year so badly. And I got to give Craig credit for this. Carden said this on social media. How can we take this team seriously when the head coach said the team sucked?
It's a good line.
The head coach, he's right. No, I'm with him on that. So what are we bitching about?
Pitino said that to get get those guys motivated. It worked.
Okay. Right?
They won six, seven in a row, whatever it was, six in a row.
Did he say it to get him motivated? Or did they happen to get motivated because he really did think they sucked?
Well, before that, by the way, they lost 8 of 10.
Does it matter? Does keeping it real matter? Like, as long as the result is the result, it doesn't matter.
Well, I think if you're sitting in that room and you're looking at their very unimpressive resume, and the resume sucks, and then you realize, oh, yeah, the coach told me the team basically isn't any good, maybe you say to yourself, why am I inviting them? And by the way, they weren't even close. They weren't one of the first four out. Seton Hall, one of the first four out. Look, Seton Hall beat UConn. When you beat, and don't give me St. John's played UConn close. What the hell does that mean? Who cares? Did they beat him?
Yeah, he still lost.
And I admit, I'm very traditional. Whenever we get to this time of year, the thing I look at, not that I am qualified like John Rothstein is, and that's why I'm glad we'll talk to him in 26 minutes. Either John's going to say, Evan, you're the voice of reason, or John's going to throw me in the corner and say you're an idiot and use funny nicknames to describe that. I can't wait. I love John Rothstein. I'm just a man that likes to look at your resume. Like, who did you beat? Who did you lose to? How many good wins do you have? That's it. That's why I look at these other stats. Like this new stat they created, this thing called net. The net is one of the dumbest things ever. Here's what the net is for those citing the number. It takes into account game results. Okay, cool. Strength of schedule, game location. And then, how about this? Net offensive and defensive efficiency? Why would we give a damn? This is about winning and losing.
Right.
It doesn't matter what your net offensive and defensive efficiency are.
So it's comparing not like situations.
Yeah.
Right? It's just efficiency against whoever you happen to be playing that day, and then it's aggregated?
They factor in the quality of the opponent, but my point is, if you win the game, it doesn't matter what your net offense and defensive efficiency were. It feels like it's too analytically driven. I look at it as, who did you beat? Did you beat good teams? Did you lose to bad teams? Like, what did you do? And for St. John's, and I hope that Rick Pitino continues to build this program, and he probably will. Like, they'll be in a tournament next year. And basically, you're going to have a whole new roster next year. That's what BT said, and I trust him. Mm-hmm. He knows what the hell's going on with this team. But when I look at their schedule, I'm like, what are we bitching about? Oh, you played UConn close. Great. You lost to them three times. Let's have a party. what the hell does this mean? They didn't beat anybody other than Creighton. Seton Hall has some quality wins. Providence has some quality wins. Your stupid school has some quality wins.
And some bad losses, too.
I get you. So, listen, man, I'm just being honest here. What are we crying about? Oh, no.
It's because it's local. That's why. They're crying because it's local. And they're crying because the Big East only had three teams in the NCAA tournament. And it felt at one point, I mean, hell, on Friday, when I was hanging out with my buddy watching the Virginia blow a massive, not even blow a massive lead, but blowing a game against North Carolina State. Like, oh, okay. Well, the ACC will get three or four in. The Big East, dude, they're going to get like six.
Yeah, but why did we say that? Were we just being ignorant? Did we just repeat what people tell us? Like, no, why did we even say that?
No, it's a local bias.
Yeah.
It's because you see these Big East teams constantly, and we hear about them, and we hear people say that they are a tournament team despite some of their shortcomings.
Yeah, no, I said the same thing on Friday, but that's just because I was repeating what I heard. Then when I did my own research, I'm like, what the hell am I talking about? They're not a tournament team. Yeah. Like, Seton Hall has a better case for being a tournament team. They beat UConn, they beat Marquette, and they beat other tournament teams like St. Peter's and Wagner. And say what you want, Seton Hall beat them. They beat a bunch of tournament teams. What?
This is very, like, in the weeds, gambling stuff or whatever, but the net efficient, the deficient, whatever you call them, the efficiency rankings, the offense and defense, the reason those matter and come into play, that is usually a telltale sign for the big teams that get picked off and the teams that go on the run. So where St. John's...
Different. Now, by the way, that's great. I'm not saying like defensive efficiency and offensive efficiency don't matter. I'm saying in terms of picking who should go to the NCAA tournament, maybe I'm just a traditionalist. Who'd you beat? That's it.
So I'm with you.
Am I crazy? Who'd you beat? Did you beat enough good teams? Great, you're in.
But the reason people will kick and scream is where they rank in those is usually a telltale sign that St. John's not only could have made the tournament, but would have been one of those teams that got hot.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular-season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Made a run to the Sweet 16.
Well, guess what? Don't blow an 18-point lead to Seton Hall, beat UConn once, and maybe we're having a different discussion. And trust me, I'm not anti-St. John's. I'm a Seton Hall guy, if anything. And I look at their resume, and I think the big thing that they had was they got that win against UConn. I mean, UConn lost how many games all year? I think they lost three
games
all season.
They lost three all year.
And they lost to Kansas, and they lost to
Creighton.
Okay. Seton Hall being in that kind of company is pretty damn impressive, if you ask me.
And also, I think the Johnnies would have gotten in, but a lot of the bubble teams got screwed because there were teams that won their conference tournament that wouldn't have gotten in the tournament.
Okay,
so it shrunk the bubble.
NC State is one of those,
but among others.
But let me answer that. So we had five bids that were stolen.
Yes.
If all five of those bids weren't stolen, maybe St. John's makes it because they weren't one of the first four teams out.
But maybe they were one of the five first four out. They might have been at 15. They might have been in
maybe
Dayton playing the play-in.
But Pittsburgh, Indiana State, Seton Hall, and Oklahoma, we're all ahead of them.
Right.
Yeah, we're doing a little New York bias thing. So to the Johnny Crybabies, I apologize. I hope they're in the tournament next year. Let's go Red Storm, but what are we doing here?
And just an add-on, St. John's better not lose to Seton Hall next year now after the stunt Patino's pulled with the NIT.
Because they declined it.
Yeah, Shaheen Holloway and Seton Hall did not decline it, and Shaheen Holloway said they accepted it because he left it up to his team to vote on whether they want to play a couple less more games together, and they voted yes.
That's because they're ballers, man. They just want to keep balling.
Right. Patino, I get that roster's leaving. He didn't even leave it up to the team. So,
Do we know that, by the way?
Yeah, yes. And he said, quote, have to focus on the transfer portal.
Gotcha.
Which Seton Hall's going to do. Yes, this was his excuse.
He didn't leave it up to the kids?
That is, from everything I understood, Seton Hall did, and St. John's Patino made the call.
Do you have a quote of Rick Pitino?
I don't have a quote from Pitino saying that.
I'm not going to besmirch the Pitino name unless we know for sure. Because I would agree with you, if he didn't leave it up to the kids the way Holloway did, kind of what's the word I'm looking for?
Douchey.
Douche move?
Douchey move.
Thank you, Teague. But you are talking in circles right now. You are not confirming that Pitino did that.
You don't know for a fact.
So go do your research.
No, but here's the thing, regardless. If Pitino, what he did tell us is they're going to focus, they need to get a jump on the transfer portal. Shaheen Holloway has said you could do both. So if next year, Seton Hall, who has spent time in the NIT, is beating St. John's twice again in the regular season, then what did Pitino really do in the transfer
portal? You think Shaheen Holloway is a little upset that his team isn't in it, but St. Peter's is? Small part of him, like a tiny part of him. What's the St. Peter's team name
again?
Peacock. Oh, they are the Peacocks.
What about Peacock?
I knew that the last part of the word was a part of their name. I just wasn't sure if it was Gamecocks or some other.
They are the Peacocks.
Okay. I'll just make it true.
Gamecocks of South Carolina.
I don't think he's upset by that. Why would he be upset by that?
That the school he left,
when they pulled off
that incredible run that the Peacocks went on.
And they had sustained success.
I'm just saying.
So he's probably happy.
And by the way,
his bank account's different.
I understand. And he did a fine job. I'm not anti-Holloway.
In all seriousness, how many birds are cocks?
Peacock.
What was that?
Gamecock.
There's Gamecock.
Peacock.
Rooster cocks.
That's a nickname.
Oh. How many are there?
You better look it up. I'm afraid if I Google how many birds are cocks, it would lead to a bad place. I have no idea.
Good point.
But I'll look for it if you want. My internet isn't blocked over here.
What about Peacock?
I'm afraid to search it. I am very excited to fill out a bracket. I fill one out every single season. And this year, I'm doing something different. We are having a competition in the Roberts household.
Mm-hmm.
It will be Evan Roberts, who watched, as I said, like four or five games this season. So my knowledge is on the surface. I admit that. Versus my wife.
Who knows?
I guess I could say her name, but maybe she wants to be private. So we'll say Evan's wife, Roberts. Then we've got my two sons, a three-year-old in Spence Roberts, who will point, and Jet Roberts, who's old enough to write and needs to work on his penmanship.
Abuelo.
So you're right. And then Abuelo Roberts, it's really Rodriguez, will compete, and Abuela. And I'll even have Dudley compete, my dog. So we are all going to compete against each other and see who wins the Roberts Household Challenge. And by the way, this is a game we should all try at home. Compete with your family and see who wins. Because I have a feeling, I got this crazy feeling Spence is coming out with a W. I do. I just
why? Because he's aware enough?
No, because we know nothing. That's right. Why. Even if you know a lot about college basketball, like I think Loogie's a smart guy,
yeah.
And I'm not besmirching your college basketball knowledge.
I think in theory,
his bracket's going to be like an abomination.
In theory, you could just use statistics, right? What's the likelihood of this upset over this number, one over 16? Okay, the one's going to win.
Why don't you try that and see how
it goes? I am going to do that.
All right. And see how that does for your bracket.
I don't think it'll take that much. Like, what's the percentage of this seat over that seat?
Yeah, that's
and
not going to...
And if it's high, I'm going to take it. If it's low, I'm not.
All right. What's going on?
So we have to pay something off from Friday. Tiki was given a homework assignment.
Yes,
because...
I was.
Oh, that's right. I said on 312, or at 312, it's now 313, so we're a minute late.
Mm-hmm.
Tiki will go down a rabbit hole over the weekend concerning a professional wrestling event known as the Montreal Screwjob.
Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels.
Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Vince McMahon, the title, WCW. Loogie and I had a debate. I think it was real. I think it was a real life event where Bret got screwed. Loogie thinks it's what we call a work. And we would let Tiki Barber spend the entire weekend researching, and then he would let us know, is it a work or was it real?
So you know why I hate conspiracy theories? Because in order for a conspiracy theory to work, like so many people have to be involved.
Right.
Like you have to have, like in the NFL, right, the side judge, the line judge, the referee, the replay assistant, the head the coaches, the executive. Like there's so many layers of conspiracy that it's just implausible to think about. But when you talk about the WWF then, now WWE.
Look at him all over.
Right? When you talk about the WWE, when you want to conspire something, there's only really like two or three people you need.
Right.
Right? And one of them being the referee. And in this particular case, the Montreal Screwjob job, Earl Hebner was the key.
Yes.
Earl Hebner was the key who called the match. He called a submission on the sharpshooter.
Yes.
Right? When without Hart submitting. He wasn't right. Tapping out. Right. I'm not tapping out.
Yes.
Instead, Earl Hebner just turned away, walked away, and called it. Called it.
Yes.
That showed me conspiracy. This was definitely a work.
What?
Definitely.
It wasn't a
work. And here's what happened. Here's what happened.
Why?
Here's why.
Yeah.
Because Hart was leaving to go to the whatever, WCW.
Yes.
Right? And they needed like a stack on storyline. And it was Vince turning heel. And so
but Bret knew, you're saying Bret was all right with it? Bret had a vendetta against Vince for a decade. That was a work in your mind?
Yeah. I think he knew it.
Wow.
It because by the way, he came back.
He did come back.
So huh? So if he was really pissed, he'd be like, I'm never working for that man again. All he right. Cost me my life. He cost me my, whatever, 14 years in WWF/E. He cost me all of that. I will never work for that man again. I won't pee on him if he's on fire. And you know what he did?
He worked for him.
He came back.
Well, I'll give you this, Tiki. Even though you sided with Loogie, I accept the result. I accept that you are on his side.
Dude,
I
don't... just look at Hebner.
Well, okay.
Go watch it again. Just watch the ref the whole time.
I've watched it 189
okay,
times.
Okay, but you're watching Shawn Michaels, and you're watching Bret Hart, and you're watching Vince, and you're watching all the other stuff. Watch the ref.
Okay. All I'll say is, while I vehemently disagree with you, I absolutely respect that you legitimately went down this rabbit hole.
Of course I did.
Like, the fact that you sat there and went down the Montreal Screwjob rabbit hole, I commend.
Dude, you put me down a rabbit hole, I'll go down it.
No, clearly we've learned that. Let's go to Jake in Rochester. Good afternoon, Jake.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Good, man. What's up?
All right, so... I'm not going to talk about the wrestling. Sorry to do it.
You do like, not have to. In fact, it's encouraged not to. Good
yes,
job.
It was probably. How old are you, Jake?
All right. Earlier, you guys were making a lot of good points, and I agree with everything you guys are saying. But I just wanted to kind of emphasize what, as a fan, I want to happen. And I do not want us to get involved in reaching for a quarterback again. Because how ironic would it be to reach at a quarterback at six?
And after having a guy like that we already drafted at six.
Yeah, and be like the rich man Dave Gettleman's move. Like Sean said, we could have had Micah Parsons and we traded back for Kadarius Toney. Like the last thing I want is to have a repeat of that. And I don't know if Joe Shane, he's made smart moves, as we've seen, like the Brian Burns thing. We flipped right. Leonard Williams pick. Like, I'm not trying to be rude to Leonard Williams, but like, I did not think we'd get a second rounder out of him. So Joe Shane is a smart guy, it seems. But if he does this and doesn't get a guy like Malik Nabers to build an actual team around with all these holes, like, we don't even have cornerbacks right now. Like, we have Deontay Banks, Trey Hawkins, mm-hmm. and some free agent we just got. Like, we have a lot more holes to fill. So if he tries to reach on another quarterback and go through this whole cycle again, it's just going to be painful to watch.
Yeah.
When, like, we could easily get a guy like Bo Nix or something in the second, or Penix in the second round. But to reach for a guy like J.J. McCarthy and put him in the situation that Daniel Jones has been in for his whole career, who is that benefiting?
Right, nobody.
Not Joe Shane.
Nobody. Oh. Nobody benefits from that. And I 100% agree with you, Jake. I don't think they're going quarterback in the first round. I don't. I think they're going impact player or maybe a tackle. But I think it's likely to be one of these wide receivers.
Let's go to Sean in Smithtown. Good afternoon, Sean.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
What's up?
So I'm coming from the angle of being a Jets fan because I know that they're right now seeing Mike Williams and adding depth to the wide receiver room. At four or one of the earlier spots, maybe with the Giants or the Chargers, what about the Jets trading up from 10 to either 4, 5, or 6? I mean, I would love Marvin Harrison Jr. if he's there, or even one of the other three guys, because the timeline of where they are with, you know, with Wilson, with another, you know, stud potential wide receivers, and then having Aaron Rodgers for maybe another year or two, it kind of fits the timeline of when they need to re-sign Sauce, Wilson, this new rookie. They can bring in a rookie, you know, 4 years, 5 years down the road. But hey, we'll have like the window right now with a deep room, maybe. You know, one of those three guys can turn into a Chase or a Jefferson.
But here's the way I would counter this, because you talk about the window. So you probably don't care that for the Jets to execute that, not having their own second-round pick, they're going to have to dangle next year's first-round pick, right? That's probably on the table if the Jets are literally thinking about, hey, can we move from 10 to 4
yeah.
or 10 to 5? Like, maybe I'm crazy, but if you want to make that kind of jump in this draft and not own a second-round pick, you can only do that. You can only do that by dangling a future number one pick. I don't think the Jets right now, as much as they need help in that wide receiver room, need to get that aggressive to bring in a rookie who you're dreaming of being a number one wide receiver. They already have a number one wide receiver.
Right.
And you're thinking about 4 years down the road when you got to pay Sauce, you got to pay Garrett. How about you add real veterans to that room? You don't trade a future number one. And by the way, you could still draft a wide receiver in this draft, maybe not with the same superstar potential as a Nabers or a Harrison, but I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze considering you're going to have to trade a future first-round pick.
Yeah, and I think, look, I'm just looking at the wide receivers that are available in free agency, and like none of them feel game-breaking. Like, I know Mike Williams is coming in for an interview today, and I like him. He's a big target. But I caught one of their games last year, and he's impactful because he's just he's hard to guard, but he's not like that dynamic, go change the face of the game type of wide receiver. Maybe that's a good thing.
They don't need that,
right? Exactly. So maybe he brings you like stability in a sense. Allen Robinson, Odell Beckham Jr., Michael Gallup are the other ones, and Tyler Boyd, who's a free agent as well from Cincinnati. So there's some names that you would know that you could bring in and they'd be interesting. But I think a lot of these guys, they've never been like that number one guy, except for Mike Williams in his early prime, Odell when he was rookie, but that was felt like a generation ago. So you're not going to go get that number one unless you go draft that guy.
But they don't need a number one. That's the beauty. I was looking right at recent history in the NFL, and we always try to follow the trends. And not that there's one perfect trend, but how many teams needed two elite wide receivers to win a championship?
The Eagles didn't win one, but that's how they got there.
Yeah, but they didn't win one.
I know, but that's how they got there.
No, absolutely. But think about it. Did the Kansas City Chiefs have that this year? Did the Kansas City Chiefs have that last year?
No.
You know, when the Rams won it, they had an elite wide receiver in Cooper Kupp, but did they have the second guy necessarily?
Well, Odell, but he got hurt in the game.
But we're talking about a different Odell. Like, I like Odell. I'm more excited about adding him.
No,
Odell was awesome down the stretch. In that game, you're telling me he was a legitimate number one wide receiver? BS.
He was
not since he left the Giants, we're being honest.
But he was great that season.
He was very good.
So
that December, January, he turned it on and looked like a number one wide receiver.
Yeah, I don't think he was ever a number one wide receiver after he left the Giants. He was a good player. And I'm all for adding good players and impactful players.
In totality, you're right. But in the moments that mattered in that Rams season, he was unbelievable. So it's hard to discount it. I know what you're saying, right? When you take it in aggregate, yeah, was he a number one? No. But in those moments it mattered, he was primed and ready for it. And he was one of the reasons that they got there and ultimately won.
Let's go to TJ in Woodbridge. Hey, TJ.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
We're good.
Good, man. What's up?
First off, I just want to say real quick, Tiki, so I'm not a Giants fan, but all my friends are. They loved what you said last week.
I appreciate you, man.
My friend Tyler said you cemented yourself as his favorite Giants running back of all time.
I like that. Voice of the people, right?
That's
Can
right.
I win that award? I've never been up
is
to
that. Is that award still exists? We
is
have to find out. We have to find out. I'll make a phone call.
What's up, TJ?
I just wanted to ask Evan. I mean, did you have what it takes to be the narrator of your own book, or did they find someone else?
I have incredibly exciting news, TJ. Thank you so much for asking that question. Apparently, on May 14th, my book, My Meds Bible, is on sale April 2nd, but the audiobook comes out on May 14th. And tonight, right after this show, with a half green, half white beard, I'm going to an undisclosed location to finish the audiobook.
It's done?
Done! Finish!
Wow, you did that quick.
I did that. My wife says the same thing. I did that. I did it quick.
Oh, let's score games and go shag.
And I got the gig. Like, they actually accepted my voiceover audition and said, you know what? We're going to let that guy read the book. And I've got another announcement to make.
Which is?
I've had so much fun reading this audiobook, I think I'm going to start a business. I think I'm open to reading audiobooks. So if you write a sports book, I'm up for it. Even a political book. You know, you write a book about Grover Cleveland, I'm there. I'll read about Grover Cleveland's life.
Nice.
Why the hell not? So I think I'm open for business because I find it therapeutic. Like, I go into this really tiny room, I take my book out, and I start reading.
Does it help that you wrote that book so you know it? Like, you know what I mean? So it's not like you're what do they mean when they say this sentence?
Yes.
Because there's certain things that I read, I'm like, wait, what are they actually trying to say?
100%. Because there are times in which I'm like, what did I mean by that? Oh, yeah, that's what I meant by that. Yes. But what I did realize, I have to admit, there are, I would say, a handful. So it's not a massive number, but there are a handful of mistakes.
Oh, God.
Now, minor mistakes. Nothing that's like earth-shattering, nothing crazy, but like minor, like teeny-weeny mistakes. I was even thinking of running a new promotion. If you can find the mistakes, I'll give you something.
Like, are they grammatical or historical?
Okay, can I give you one example?
Sure.
I don't want to give all of them. No, I'll give you.
No, because you're going to give away something for people who find them, so you just want to give one as an example.
Just one. I'm going to give you just one, just a little tiny one.
Did you screw up there and there?
No, I think that was fine. I mean, I have editors. They could figure that one out.
They should figure that out.
Derek Favors. Are you aware of Derek Favors?
Oh, God, yes.
Former Net first round.
Former Net, yep.
How did he get in the book? Read the book. You'll find out. Derek Favors was incorrectly referred to as a guard instead of a forward. And I'm not sure how that happened because
nobody cares.
Oh,
nobody will care about that.
Thank you, Tiki.
I'm just telling you, nobody cares. Positionless game that we play now.
Tiki, you have been off Twitter for some time. I will tell you, somebody will care.
Yeah, but
the Nets still in the league.
In reality, are they going to care? Did he play guard one time?
No. Right. No.
Not that size. No.
And I will give this hint. There's also a Jets-related mistake. Very minor.
So it's all of the sports outside of baseball.
Oh, no. There's a baseball mistake, too. Okay. I'd say there's like four or five. It's not a huge number. It doesn't change the trajectory of the book, in my opinion. But there were some tiny mistakes. Mm. But the audiobook is going to be finished tonight. Then it comes out in the middle of May. Amazon, if you want to pre-order and all that. More of your calls coming up. Plus, in just a few minutes, we talk to the godfather of college basketball. The man who knows more than all of us at this radio station, plus every radio station in America combined. This man knows the 12th man for St. Peter's. This man knows the water boy for the Marquette. Like, he is the most knowledgeable college basketball man in the world. His name is John Rothstein. He'll spend a few minutes with us, including confirming, if I'm right, that St. John's fans are Johnny crybabies.
I'm really worried, interested to see if he could tell me something about Tarleton State.
Oh, he will. It'll change your life. A very, very, very busy Monday in New York City. But I have to admit, as I was sitting there yesterday watching the selection show, I thought of only one human being. I didn't think of St. John's fans and all the Johnny Crybabies. I didn't think of them. I didn't think of Shane Holloway. I didn't think of him. As the bracket was coming out, I thought of the most well-respected, knowledgeable voice when it comes to college basketball. And I don't want to put anybody down, but let me just say this. This man needs to be on the dais. This man should have been on the dais on CBS on Selection Sunday. But don't worry, you're going to see so much of this guy over the next 3 weeks, you may get sick of him. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the preeminent voice in college basketball, John Rothstein. John, how you doing?
Great to be with you, friends. Always great to connect.
Good to hear you. Now, before we get started, I got a million questions. I want you to promote everything you need to promote because, like I always say to people, if you want to know what's going on in college basketball, the only guy you should listen to is John Rothstein. So let the people know where we can catch you for the next 3 weeks.
Well, obviously, you know, I'll be on different platforms, but the main stuff, Evan, this week is I'm going to be with Spiro Dedis and Jim Spinarkle out here in Dayton at the First Four Tuesday, Wednesday. Then we will go to do Friday, Sunday games in Memphis, and then I'll be back in the studio on CBS Sports Network for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, and obviously also CBS Sports Network for the Final Four.
Tremendous. Now, my first question for you is, when I went over St. John's resume, my unbiased eye, I said to myself, what the hell am I missing? Why is everybody crying? Like, they had a horrible stretch in the middle of the season. Great, they finished strong. Yes, we love Rick Pitino. They didn't feel or look like a tournament team. In your mind, did St. John's get screwed on Sunday?
No, and I did not have St. John's in my final projection for the NCAA tournament when I published it on 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. I had Seton Hall in the field of 68. I did not have St. John's. But, you know, one of the things that makes March Madness great, unless you're on the wrong end of it, is anything could happen. And we saw unprecedented bid stealers this year in conference tournament. NC State, Duquesne, Oregon, and we found out last night even New Mexico would not have made the field if those teams did not win their conference tournament. So it was a Murphy's Law type situation for St. John's. But here's the bottom line, guys. If you are in or around the bubble, chances are everything is not aligning in an ideal situation. The best way to not be in a bubble situation is to not go near the bubble, and that's a message to everybody else. There's so much of a debate, obviously, this time of year about what metrics are they using. Do they value non-conference strength of schedule? Do they not value non-conference strength of schedule? When you put yourself on the bubble, you are susceptible to those types of evaluations.
Yeah, no, John, and you're right about that, but I wonder how much familiarity and coaches' resumes matter with this. I mean, obviously, Rick Pitino is new to St. John's, and after a little slump there for, I don't know, about 2 weeks, they turned it around, and they were fantastic down the stretch, which is why everybody thought they were going to get in. But look at my team. Look at Virginia, what Tony Bennett has done. I mean, he had some bad losses. I mean, they lost to Duke by like 30-something. They lost to Virginia Tech by 30-something, scored under 50 points, and then they lose to NC State in the semifinal on a prayer that goes overtime, and then they end up losing that game in overtime, and obviously set up for NC State to come a bid stealer. But I didn't know if Virginia was actually an NCAA tournament team this year, yet they got in.
Well, see, this is the one thing I asked one of the members of the selection committee last night on CBS Sports Network. The common thread with Virginia and Colorado, two teams that will be here in Dayton in the First Four, is these two teams both had pristine resumes in quad three and quad four. What does that mean to people who are out there listening from the periphery? Both Virginia and Colorado did not have any bad losses.
Got it.
Now, you look at what they had against the field. Virginia had two wins against the field. One against Florida, who's a very good team out of the SEC, but also Virginia had one against Clemson on the road, and Colorado beat Washington State twice. So the resumes from a quad three and four perspective of Virginia and Colorado are very similar. Now, Virginia, I agree with you, Teak, over the last month or two has had spurts where it has not looked like an NCAA tournament team. But at the same time, the resumes were decided that they were better and good enough to go to the NCAA tournament.
What about Seton Hall? Because you mentioned you would have had Seton Hall in, and I agree, that's the Big East team that probably has the biggest gripe for being left out. They beat UConn, they beat Marquette, they didn't have any really brutal losses. What about their resume, in your mind, kept Seton Hall out?
Well, when I was evaluating the last teams for the NCAA tournament in my bracket, and everything was really, really close between Seton Hall, St. John's, I took Colorado out, excuse me, I took Virginia out when I saw them lose to NC State in the ACC tournament. But when I was scrubbing these resumes down to the bone, the one thing that put Seton Hall to me over the top if everything was close was Seton Hall had beaten UConn and Marquette. And if you're good enough to beat, you know, the top, two of the top eight seeds in the NCAA tournament, to me as a bubble team, that should put you in the field. Now, with that said, the committee also decided that Seton Hall's losses, losing to USC, losing to Iowa, losing to Rutgers, were too much to overcome. So people take this all into account, guys, and I say this, it's the overall body of work, it's the entirety of the resume, and that's why, you know, if you're going to be in a scenario where you take bad losses to non-NCAA tournament teams, you have to overdo it with massive wins, and I'll give you a perfect example. Texas A&M, coming into last week, had an extremely, extremely flawed resume. You look at the resume, and last week, Texas A&M had five quad three losses. But then you start looking at some of the wins that Buzz Williams' team had. Kentucky twice, Tennessee once, Florida, Iowa State. Texas A&M had the volume in terms of its wins to override the difficult losses.
Yeah, when you talk about those, the bid stealers and the NC States of the world, the Oregons who you talked about, you know, the impact that they have, that's really what St. John should be mad about, right? It's not necessarily, you know, the committee doesn't know what the hell they're doing. It's more, you just had unexpected teams that have to be in the tournament.
Well, you guys, you know, if you follow me on social media, you know how at least once a day when I'm going through the changes in these metrics, I use the term every game matters.
Yeah.
Evan, how many times did we see St. John's and Tiki, how many times did we see St. John's be a play away for a Trey Bark win? Was St. John's a team that outplayed Creighton to Creighton this year and they failed to get a defensive rebound? Yes. Was St. John's good enough to beat Marquette at home at Madison Square Garden? Without question. Was St. John's up by double figures against Seton Hall at UBS Arena? No question. Mm. But those games are all missed opportunities when they don't go your way. And that's why I always say it's the overall body of work. Every game matters. I've heard coaches, guys, in the last week say, and there's no Big East coaches, you know, said this, but I've heard coaches say, you know, since this date, we've been so much better. We've been good. And that's like, that's fine. But that doesn't mean November and December don't count.
Right. Right. No, you're right. We're talking to the great John Rothstein. All right, let's look at who's in this tournament. UConn has been the best team in the country all year long. We know what they accomplished last year. They're the number one of number ones. But what do you think of that region? Because we've got three of the four teams that made the Final Four in that East region. Your thoughts on UConn's draw and their chances of going back-to-back?
It's outstanding in terms of location because it will be a very pro-UConn crowd in both Brooklyn and Boston. But I think if you look right now at the 2, 3, 4, and 5 seed in UConn's region, I don't think if any of those teams, Iowa State, Illinois, San Diego State, or Auburn, went to a Final Four, if anybody would be overly surprised. I thought Auburn, by winning the SEC tournament, was going to be a very strong 3 seed. That wasn't the case. Illinois, if it was not in UConn's bracket, I might pick to go to a Final Four. And Iowa State obviously beat Houston by 28 on Saturday in the Big 12 tournament title game. So I look at UConn as having a favorable path in terms of its location, but the Huskies are going to be tested here, assuming obviously they handle business in Brooklyn and get to Boston.
The West, though, with UNC at number one there, Alabama's in that division as well, and Baylor. You usually do these brackets as, I don't know, you give them these nicknames. What's the West to you?
Well, Zeke, I'm happy you asked that. If Evan's open to it, I will give you my nickname for all the four regions.
Damn right.
Well, Let's go right now, Teague, with the West, and then we'll work our way around.
Okay.
Because of what we have in the West region being played in Los Angeles in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, which is right near Hollywood, the first thing that jumped out to me was North Carolina's the one and Arizona is the two. So that means if the seeds hold, we have a situation where Caleb Love could be facing his old team for the right to go to the Final Four. And that region's playing right down the street from Hollywood. That's the region of drama. Then let's look at the region that you just referenced with UConn. We've got Dan Hurley. You've got TJ Alsleberger, who looks like he could be the next Ken Shamrock. You've got Brad Underwood, who keeps a treadmill at practice just in case he's not happy with the flow of things. You have Bruce Pearl. You've got Brian Dutcher in San Diego State. Highly competitive people, highly emotional people. This is the region of gladiators. And then we go to the top right. I look at the perimeters in this region. Houston, Marquette, Florida, one of the great offensive teams that we've seen in college basketball this year. Kentucky, John Calipari's best offensive team ever. Duke, Wisconsin, the best offensive team of the Greg Gard era. This, to me, the South region is the region of firepower. And then the bottom right, things get a little bit more intense. Things get a little bit more, I would just say, tight. Because I'm looking at the fact that Purdue is in this region. And make no mistake about it, Purdue cannot truly exorcise the demon from last year's loss to Fairleigh Dickinson unless it wins four games and goes to a Final Four. Mm-hmm. Then you've got Tennessee, who, for as good as it's been under Rick Barnes, has never been past the Sweet 16 with him as the head coach. And then you've got a Kansas team that did not have both Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson available for the Big 12 tournament last week in Kansas City. This is the region of tension.
Mm. I like it. Now, you mentioned the Caleb Love storyline and how appealing that is. Tell me more about this storyline that I wasn't aware of, obviously. I'm sure you are, obviously. Is the Long Beach State head coach Dan Monson has basically been fired, right. But they went on the run in their tournament, got in, yeah. And now they're in the NCAAs with a fired head coach? Tell me more about that situation.
So it was about a week ago, Evan, you know, I was working on the story. We were at CBS Sports Network getting ready for a conference tournament game. And, you know, then the news came out that Long Beach State was going to part with Coach Monson after 17 years. But then, as you guys know, Long Beach State was still seeded fourth in the Big West. And when you are in a one-bid league, and, you know, obviously things are a lot more balanced now than they used to be in college basketball because, you know, players are not retained at the same rate as they used to be, you know, when we were all growing up. So it's not as much rhythm and chemistry, especially at the mid-major level. So Long Beach State now made the choice about, you know, 6 or 7 days ago to part ways with Dan Monson, but he will be the one that's coaching in the NCAA tournament. Now get this for a storyline, guys. The matchup is Arizona against Long Beach State. Who is the head coach of Arizona? Tommy Lloyd, 20-year assistant to Mark Few at Gonzaga. Dan Monson, as we remember, was the original coach of Gonzaga when the Bulldogs broke through at 99 and went to the Elite Eight, and which UConn beat Gonzaga to give Jim Calhoun his first berth in the Final Four. So the matchup in that game is surreal because you have two coaches with deep ties to Gonzaga.
Huh. You think Monson's done?
At Long Beach State?
No, just in general. It's been a lot of years coaching.
I mean, you know, people say retirement's the worst, you know, word in the dictionary, but somebody also told me never speculate on speculation.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you about that. All right, so give me your favorite team. I'm not talking about the team you think is going to win, that has the best or easiest or most likely path, but your favorite team for whatever the storyline is, who should we be watching that John Rothstein has fallen in love with this season?
I wouldn't say falling in love with Teague, but I would say the most compelling storyline in the NCAA tournament is Purdue. Because, I mean, let's face it, and I mean this with all due respect, because my heart has been broken for Gene Katie, for Matt Painter, for Purdue fans. Let's think about Purdue's last half a decade, shall we? In 2018, Purdue had a Final Four caliber team, a team that I think could have won it all if things broke right. Isaac Hotz in the NCAA tournament suffered a gruesome elbow injury. They lose to Chris Beard and Texas Tech in the Sweet 16. 2019, they lose, obviously, the memorable game against Virginia in the a lead eight.
Yeah.
When Purdue had a lead late, Mamadi Diakite made that floater shot, and all of a sudden, we remember Virginia went on to win a national championship. Then, 2020, there's no tournament. 2021, you're a fourth seed. You lose to North Texas. Then you go to Philadelphia in 2022. You have a team that has Jaden Ivey, Zach Edey, Travion Williams. Yeah. You lose to St. Peter's in the Sweet 16. And then last year, Fairleigh Dickinson, a team that was not good enough to win the Northeast Conference tournament because Merrimack won that tournament, but Merrimack wasn't eligible to go to the NCAA tournament because of the transition rule. Right. Fairleigh Dickinson then goes and pulls off the biggest upset in the history of the NCAA tournament. That right there is the sample for what life has been like from 2018 until now for fans of Purdue.
Hmm. And you know why all that happened, Tiki?
That was a 116, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So we know what happened the last time the 116.
Virginia, right?
2018.
No question. But guys, this is one thing I want to point out. I think it's important to remember this. And I'm not making excuses for anything, but just in terms of the historical context, when you think about the fact that Virginia lost to UMBC, we have to remember DeAndre Hunter suffered a season-ending injury before that game and was not available for the NCAA tournament. Right. And UMBC, despite being a 16 seed, has resources, and for the level that it plays at, has very, very good resources. With all the respect to Fairleigh Dickinson, Fairleigh Dickinson does not have near the resources that a place like UMBC has in the Northeast Conference. And Fairleigh Dickinson didn't just not win its own conference tournament. It had to play in the first four a couple of days before just to get to the game. It was without question the biggest upset in the history of the NCAA tournament.
I kind of like Tiki's thinking, though. Right. Purdue is on the revenge tour like Virginia a few years ago.
I mean, look, the beauty of losing to 116 is that the following year, the next year, Virginia won the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
And so it just made for an unbelievable story down in Charlottesville.
Hopefully
the same thing happens for Purdue.
This will be interesting, but the one thing I repeat in my head as we watch crazy college basketball, this is March. This is March. John, enjoy it. I know you'll be doing a great job. We'll be watching, and always good talking to you, man.
Appreciate you, John.
Anytime, guys. Great visiting with you.
Likewise.
The great John Rothstein. This, you know what?
God, he laid out Purdue. I didn't even realize the path that they've been on.
I like that. You know what? As I fill out my bracket now, maybe I will.
It's making you want to root for Purdue.
The only thing I've done, because I haven't filled out a bracket, but yesterday at about 9 o'clock at night, there was a Twitter account, Barstool Gambling. I'll give them credit because they did this. Barstool Gambling put out a tweet in which they would very quickly flash every logo of every team in the field of 68.
Mm-hmm.
And their line was, pause it, that's the team that you should bet on to win the whole damn thing. So I was like, all right, I'm a sucker for this. Why the hell not? I remember doing that during Shohei Ohtani's free agency. Click on it, it'll show you the team he ends up with. And I would do it over and over again until he was a Met, which obviously would never happen. So I do it, and the first team that comes up is Iowa State.
Mm.
Now, Iowa State is the last of the two seeds. They're in the East region, the region that features UConn. That UConn is the heavy, heavy favorite.
That would be the Gladiator region.
The Gladiator region. And I quickly did some research on Iowa State, and I was like, you know what? Those are my boys. I like them. They got to clean up the free throw shooting. That's the one thing that scares me a little. They're a little sloppy when it comes to hitting free throws late in game. You know, you better hit them. You're playing a close game against Washington State second round. You better make sure you nail those free throws. So I went right to my FanDuel Sportsbook app, and that is the only bet I've made in this tournament, Iowa State to win the national championship, all because I clicked on it. And you know what? That's probably the best way to make a bet when it comes to the NCAA tournament, because God knows what the hell's going to happen.
What happens if you landed on James Madison? You're going to bet the Dukes to go all the way?
It's a great question, Luke. I don't know. I may have.
Because the Cyclones is a good one. It's spicy. You probably got good odds. If UConn gets knocked off, you could cash out. It's a good little bet.
22-1.
Nice.
No, you're right, Luke. If I would have done it, and let's say Long Beach State came up, not even a 16 seed, do I rush and make the bet? Probably not. I think it was a combination of nice little spicy pick, did my research, liked what I saw, and I said, let's go for it.
And you didn't want to spit in the face of fate. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Because if they go on a run, I'll be pissed.
Do they still have that up? Because I want to do it now.
Yeah. Why would it not be up?
I didn't know if it was like a 24-hour thing they were doing, and maybe it just
no,
got...
No, it's betting up on who's going to win a national championship.
All right, I'm clicking on
oh,
it.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Barstool link
the Barstool
is what you
thing.
Meant.
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah. what I was going to check that out.
Yeah, I'll retweet that for people that want to do that. We'll come back and get your calls, 877-337-6666, and you like a good conspiracy theory? This is more than a conspiracy theory. We may have the proof for all the Tom Brady lovers out there, that Tom Brady truly is a vengeful douche. We may have the proof that even fanboys like Tommy Lugauer can't defend. We'll take a listen to what that is next, plus more of your calls from the Johnny Crybabies, and the latest on a great weekend for the Jets, and Giant fans figuring out what they're going to do come draft time. A lot going on, Evan and Tiki, on this very busy Monday.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.